Yippee-ki-yay, mother podcasters. Oh, boy, am I happy to be back. Die Hard Season 2 is right around the corner, and I know some of you are really excited for the upcoming season. I'm excited for it too. You can tell because I'm doing this new thing where I sound happy in the intros, so you can tell that we're on the up and up. I am extremely excited specifically for this episode, so much so that I'm going to release it early. You're welcome. You don't need to thank me. If you want to thank me, though, I will accept that. I'll accept that in the form of a 5-star rating, and you can leave a 5-star rating on your native podcast app. You don't even need to leave the app you're on to do it. Just do it right there. 5 stars are easy. You can tell us how much you love the episode. You can tell us how much you love comedy. Tell me something irrelevant if you want. You can put in your favorite food. I don't care. 5 stars, it'll be the happiest thing that's ever happened to me. This episode was so much fun to record. I've wanted to get this guest on the podcast for a long time. She is absolutely hilarious and working really, really hard in the comedy world. She is going to be on a tour with a fantastic show. I feel like I'm made of spiders, and I would absolutely recommend that you get some tickets for that. Get a ticket for you. Get a ticket for a friend. Get a ticket for your mum. Everyone could love it. It's a show for everyone. Today's guest was in the list Hot 100, Top 10 Comedians. You can't beat that. That's top 10. That's incredible. She is also the host of Snookered on the BBC Sounds. She was in The Scott Squad on BBC Scotland. You can see her as a regularly occurring guest on Breaking the News. And she's done so much more. Oh, the list goes on and on. I can't even say everything she's done. But we will get into it and we'll talk about a lot of it on the show. So make sure you keep listening. She has, though, been a support act for some of comedy's greatest names. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt that she is going to be up there as one of those great names in the very near future. But for now, prepare your ear holes and make way for one of your new favourite comedians. Please welcome to the podcast. It's Amy Matthews.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thanks. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, we're recording on a Monday. We were both saying just in the pre-record, we've had a big Monday vibe Monday. We've had to-do lists and admin and nothing that exciting but being productive, which is great.
Yeah, I find Monday nights, what a great time to record, because either you've had a really awful day or what a pleasant surprise of a Monday.
It's very true. Also, I'm a bit of a freak in that I quite like a Monday, like in the same, I really like January, which is very unpopular.
I think maybe you like everything backwards.
I know. I like winter more than summer, and yeah,
I'm with you there.
I'm wired wrong, but I love it. I really like the coziness of winter, and I like the I don't know, with January and Mondays, which in my head are the same thing, you know, January is the Monday of the year. I like that there's, I don't know, it's a kind of like get your life together time, isn't it? And I get such a kick out of being organized, which is such an unattractive quality.
But someone's got to do it. You know, it's like a bin man. Someone's
got to do it. And it's this guy, I'm afraid.
I'm fully with you with winter, though. Like, I think it's always better to be too cold. And I get the feeling that we both really enjoy a good jumper.
We share a good jumper. I really, really love, whenever I go on holiday as well, I tend to sort of, without even realizing, book either Scandinavia or, somewhere that's kind of cold and beautiful. That's my ideal scenario. There's nothing I hate more than being absolutely, like, I had a trip to Malaysia a few years ago, and it was like, it's 32 degrees at night.
Oh yeah,
and like 40 odd in the day. It's so wrong, and the humidity was like nothing I've ever experienced. It was like walking into a steam room, and there was just no let up. That's just what it was. You had to exist like a gecko for ages. Like, it was just so unpleasant. I know people that absolutely thrive on that, but Christ alive, I'm not one of them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, you'll never ever can hear about me complaining that I'm too cold.
No, agreed.
Like, you know, if you're cold, you get a hot water bottle, you get a hot chocolate, get a jumper, it's fine. But how do you solve being too hot? You can't have that many cans of Coke, you'll die.
Exactly. This country as well is not, like, does not have the structure or amenities to accommodate extreme heat. Yeah. We just can't do it. We don't have aircon. We don't have anything good, you know.
Yeah, well, like, we're in a flat, so, like, they get absolutely boiling. I think I must have spent about 6 months just sleeping on top of the sheets. And, yeah, I mean, this heat, it's getting a problem. Why isn't someone raising awareness about it? Someone's got to say, this heat is getting a problem.
And if you sleep not under a duvet, all the monsters and ghosts can get to you.
Exactly. Well, because your feet are free. And we need a little Scandinavian girl to come and tell us what's up.
Exactly right. No, I'm with you on that. Very much with you on that.
So I think it's worth pointing out, I think 2023 seems to have been a really big year for you. You made the list's top 100,
yes,
which is crazy.
That was really nice. Yeah, it's also because it's lovely because it's a Scottish publication. And like I've lived in Scotland for knocking on the door of 6 years now. And like I very much consider it home. And it's given me so much. And I love it with all my heart. So I think whenever there's any kind of recognition that you're contributing to a cultural scene that is intrinsically Scottish,
yeah,
I'm really always really proud of that, because it's really important to me. Like the comedy scene here is really important to me, the people, the place, like just there's so much that I love about it. And as I say, like, yeah, I really consider it home. So yeah, that was a very lovely thing actually. And yeah, it's been a bonkers year really, in a lot of lovely ways. As I've tried to just sort of yeah, take each thing as it comes. It's been great. I've had so much fun, which is a lovely thing to be able to say.
Yeah, I think it's always really nice when, like, you know, I like to do a bit of research on my guests before, like, you come on the podcast. And it's always nice when you get to go on your website and then, like, you can look at it and be like, oh, 2023, 2023. And you can just be like, oh, I think they probably had a great year.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, it was because the year before was an absolute fucker. Like, it was awful. More, you know, personally than professionally. It was nice to kind of have, after an absolute rotter, to have like, yeah, a kind of...
like a payback year.
Yeah, I've earned myself a year of lovely times. and, you know, don't get me wrong, there's obviously a lot of hard work and stuff. And it's the age-old thing that you only ever post your highlights, don't you?
Yeah.
But as a kind of... to be very general about it, yeah, I had a really fantastic year last year. I had a lovely time.
Maybe that's the 24 trend that we need to establish. Just like, oh, I was rejected from this gig, I didn't get this role.
Yes, literally, yeah, exactly right. Got a rejection letter from that commissioner. Yeah, I had a terrible date, you know. Just everything, all the bad stuff. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
It's always really good when I get to have people on the podcast as well, when I can kind of say, like, oh, I saw you doing comedy and I'm genuinely a fan. Like,
oh,
I really
man, that's
it.
So cool. Thank you. What a lovely thing to say.
You're always welcome. We're all about compliments on this podcast. Yeah, I was recording an episode of the podcast the other day and one of the guests was like, oh, you're really nice. And I was like, well, this is a podcast about the worst gig of your life. Something has got to be nice about it.
You need to butter us up a bit. Yeah.
I'm a dick off air, but for the hour here, I've just got to be really nice.
Quite right.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, I've been reading up recently. Like, I knew that obviously you're really good at comedy and I think, you know, you're great at it, but I've been cramming recently to see what else I could find out. And, you know, it turns out you've done some incredible things. You've written on Have I Got News For You and Breaking the News, and you've been on loads of Breaking the News, and you host a podcast on BBC Sounds, which is great.
Yeah, that was such a lovely thing to come out of nowhere as well, because I think there's nothing... The best things about this job are always the moments... They're not really like the milestones, because you sort of go into it and be like, oh, when I get that thing, I'll be happy. And then you get there and you go, but when I get that thing, I'll be happy. And it's the route to madness. And I think you have to sort of really... like for me personally, the absolute best moments in this job are always when you realize you're having an immense amount of fun, or you're getting to exercise in some way talking about something you're passionate about or something you love, you know, whatever that looks like, and it's what's, and you're being paid for it. It feels, it's so disorientating and really bizarre to me, and I have to check in with that quite a lot, because that novelty doesn't really go away. You know, I didn't know this was an option. I didn't know you could, you know, pay your rent talking about snooker, or pay your rent, you know, having a daft time in Birmingham or whatever it might be, you know, like it's a really lovely, silly thing. And that's not to, I'm trying to get better at not talking down the amount of work it is, because, you know, we'll obviously caveat this with, of course, it's not, you know, it's not a 12-hour nurse's shift. We all know this. It's, you know, it's a different kind of headspace and hard work. But it's, even though on paper, you're going to work for 20 minutes a night or whatever, the legwork behind it is, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. It's a very competitive industry. It's a very, it requires so much travel and so much of it is really unglamorous. Like, so much of it is just being in front of a laptop, like doing admin, and then getting on a train to go and do the thing that's really fun. But there's a real side order of shite that goes with all of the good stuff, you know, like with any job. It's the same as any job. But yeah, it's there are so many moments where you do get to go, I can't believe this is work. This is really fun. And I've had a fair few of those in the last couple of years, which is nice.
Oh yeah, that's really great. And I think it's that same thing that people do with clothes, you know, when you're like, oh, I love that top, it looks great on you, and you're like, no, it's just from Primark, and it's like, yeah, but it does, it looks really good on you, you should own that. And then it's the same thing with comedy, where people are like, I'm just telling jokes, and it's like, yeah, but you know, you worked so hard to tell those jokes, you should be really proud
of what
they are.
Absolutely. And also, I completely agree. And also that it's, I remember when I, like when I was growing up, I'd quite often hear like the kind of hack joke that would happen on state, like on TV or on a special or whatever, would often be like, so I'm a stand-up comedian, so mum and dad are proud, like in a like kind of really sarcastic voice. And I remember sort of even at the time being like, I don't get it. Like, why wouldn't they be proud? Like that's such a cool thing. And then I realize with, you know, time and experience and understanding this industry a lot more, it's because a lot of those comics that I was watching, their parents are doctors and lawyers, and you know, they come from a very particular socioeconomic background, where, to be fair, if you'd sent your son or daughter to private school for your whole life and then they turned around and went, mummy, I'd like to be a clown, you probably would be a bit disappointed. Whereas like I couldn't compute why that would be bad, like why that would be like a letdown, because I know like my parents, I'm so lucky to have very, very supportive family, and they think it's the coolest thing in the world, you know, they can't believe that that's, I don't go and do a 9-to-5 job, and they think that that's wonderful, and I think that that's wonderful. So yeah, it was just that realization, it's like, oh, that's why. It's because the sort of ilk of person that, you know, I mean, it's getting much better. There's a long way to go, but it's getting much better. It's not all that sort of genre of person doing comedy anymore. But yeah, it was just a realization I had that, like, that's why that joke, that's why that hack joke was in play. Yeah.
And I guess, to be fair, it doesn't really work as well when you come out and you say, I'm a stand-up comedian and mum and dad are genuinely really proud of me.
Yeah, if I opened being like, actually, my family love me. My family are so supportive of all of my choices. For sure. I think I might struggle a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other acclaim that I'd written down from your website, just because I thought, you know, really good, but looked really funny amongst all the other reviews, was just Going Places from the Edinburgh Evening News. And I thought it was funny. It was just, you know, two words.
Nice.
Yeah, I just thought it was this lovely, just two words summary, just quite funny. Just so short, but, you know, seeing what you're up to and knowing what you're up to this next year, It kind of sums it up perfectly. You're absolutely going places.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. Well, let's see.
And that's the end of the little section I like to call praising the guest so that they like you a little more.
Quite right. Mission accomplished.
There you go. So I was wondering, like, everyone has their own kind of really unique story of how they got into stand-up, and generally everyone's story is really, really different. And I was wondering if you could shed some light on what that was for you.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, the abridged version of how I got into it. I mean, comedy was, I know a lot of comics who, in this generation of comics, I'll caveat it with that, actually, because now there are career comedians and it's not an insane thing to leave school or university and go, that's what I want to do for a job, because, you know, there are now available avenues and it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's such a huge part of media and arts and culture in this country. I know a lot of comics who were like, oh, it's just what I wanted to, like, I was obsessed with comedy growing up. I've seen every special from this person. And I went to the Fringe every year. I am not in that camp. I loved comedy. I was very much like, my family would watch panel shows growing up, that kind of, you know, that kind of thing. But that's sort of it. And then I went to uni, graduated, and knew that life was about to get very grown up and very normal. And I had a sort of bucket list thing where I was like, I just want to, like, before I need to take time off work and before I get too self-conscious and before I start caring too much, I think I'll write a play, like a two-person play, and take it to the Fringe, with complete naivety about like what that meant, what that entailed.
Yeah.
Did that, and that naivety was a superpower, because I think it's one of those things where if you think about it too much, you'd never do it. And I did a two-person play, like just a tonic years and years ago, and my friend came along, who is John Tothill, who is now a celebrated stand-up and character comic, but we were at school together, and he came along and was like, you write like a stand-up, you like the way that you script write is like a stand-up. He was like, you should just try stand-up. And I did. I was moving to Edinburgh for my master's degree. And when I got there, I was like, great, I'm in a city where I don't know anyone. What better place to embarrass myself?
Yeah.
And so I did a like the student open mic night. It was so fun. Loved it. Really great. And it was at Monkey Barrel Comedy. They used to, and still do, run the or accommodate the Edinburgh Review show. And whilst I was there, this was the sort of bizarre thing. I was I needed a bar job whilst I was a student to keep me financially afloat. So I asked for a job behind the bar whilst I was there, and got a job behind the bar. And whilst I was behind the bar one week, there was a dropout. Chris, the manager at the time, was like, Amy, you've done gigs, haven't you? And I was like, I've done a gig. They were like, do you just want to hop on? And again, with like a sort of brilliant naivety, just went, oh, all right then, yeah, sure. So I was waiting in the wings. I really vividly remember it was Liam Wisnail hosting, which is very funny to me now, because he's probably, if not my closest, one of my closest friends in comedy. And he said, next up in the competition is Amy Matthews. I didn't know it was a competition. I had no idea, but it was like a new act night competition. I won the competition, and the prize was to like come back the following week for more time. And it was this snowball effect. It was all this, it's the happiest accident in the world. Cause I was on track to go into publishing. That was always, you know, that was what I wanted to do. Academia. I love studying. I love, you know, as I mentioned, I like admin and doing organizational things. I'm not very,
I'm not very fun. Studying to those backwards things that you love.
Yeah, exactly. So I it was all a really happy accident, but my God, I can't imagine doing anything else now. So thank goodness it was.
Yeah, and that really seems like one of them situations where everything just seemed to like line up so perfectly that, you know, of course you were going to be like, oh, I really think I should do this.
Yeah, and it was just it was a perfect time. It was a perfect place. Again, this is why I've got so much love and respect for this, for the sort of Scottish comedy scene in particular, because I think it really helped me get decent quick, because I was doing decent gigs from the off, and it stops that kind of I feel like I can say this as somebody from the south, that there can be quite a, you know, a open mic London problem, in that it's very London centric or very London focused. It meant that because of the amount of tourists you're gigging to all the time, you weren't able to do that. It had to be accessible. You had to sort of find your voice quite quickly. And yeah, that's why I've got such a kind of appreciation for the scene up here, because it was my it was my fertile ground to both muck about and evolve in a serious way. You know, it allowed space for both, which was great.
Yeah, it must have been such a great thing to be able to move to Scotland, somewhere that, you know, facilitates comedy so well. And I think, you know, it's definitely become kind of so synonymous with comedy. And like, yeah, you've got some of, like Billy Connolly is from Scotland, who's one of the all-time comedy greats. And I believe it's just from like the middle of nowhere in Scotland.
Totally.
And yet what he does is still so accessibly funny.
Exactly. And with a more kind of cynical, businessy head on, I mean, our three main local clubs are Monkey Barrel, The Stand and Glee.
Yeah.
And they are like, you know, UK institutions. And I think to have that kind of caliber of venue on your doorstep is a huge thing. And they're also three clubs that are really good at nurturing talent, you know. They pride themselves on that, which is a lovely thing, and you know, something that it'd be nice to see more of it, I suppose, across the industry as a whole. So yeah, it's I feel very, very lucky to be an adopted Scot, if I may.
Yeah, and when you look at your CV and you look at Scott Squad and Breaking the News, like they've very clearly accepted you in the best way.
Yeah, which is, I mean, really lovely. And but again, that's something that Scotland does very well. And they're, I think it's not perfect, but are certainly more welcoming to quote unquote outsiders than perhaps an English sentiment is. That's such a lovely thing. And yeah, I feel so lucky to have been given so many opportunities at BBC Scotland specifically, or BBC Radio Scotland specifically, and a lot of lovely Scottish press have looked after me over the years. So yeah, it's lovely.
I think for listeners who somehow might not know what The Stand or Monkey Barrel or Glee is, like, it's kind of worth pointing out that these are, like, if you ever look at competition shows, you know, if you look at Chortle Student Comedy or BBC Newcomers, anything like that, like, these clubs are absolutely there. If you've got Next Up Comedy, you'll probably see it there all the time. Like, clubs like Monkey Barrel, they're absolutely institutions within comedy.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's so true. And have such varied programming as well. I think that's another thing. They're very, very good at keeping their, like, curating and keeping their program interesting and lively and current, and I think that's a marvelous thing to have.
Yeah, obviously this year as well, I think it's definitely worth talking about, you're gonna be going on tour, which is really exciting. Yes. Do you want to talk to us about that?
Yeah, it's only a little one. It's a little tour around the UK and Ireland. It's called I Feel Like I'm Made of Spiders. That's the name of my friend show. Thank you. It's the name of my friend show this year, and that's the show that I'm taking around about the country. I'm really looking forward to it. It's a lot of my favourite venues and a lot of my favourite cities, and I'm really looking forward to reviving it, because it's sort of sat dormant as a show for a few months, and I'm really looking forward to relearning it and taking it out on the road again, because this show means the absolute world to me. It was I think a kind of bit of a breakthrough career-wise. I was very lucky that it got some really lovely critical attention throughout the Fringe, and it's a show I'm really proud of. And as I say, like after a shiter of a year, it was like the show is sort of about it, but not in a hopefully depressing way. It's a funny show, and it's got such a special place in my heart, this show, and I really love sharing it with people. And one of the best things about this show, more than sort of anything else I've ever done, is it speaks about a few things and covers a few topics that I've had lots of strangers either after shows or message me on Instagram and stuff and be like, this really connected with me, or like, I'm so relieved I've seen this, it's helped me understand someone I love better, or like, you know, and like that kind of, this show is job has got so many different masks, it's got so many different faces, and they're all valid and they're all fun, and you can just be having a laugh on a Friday night in Nottingham with a stag do. Great, that's lovely, that's got its own value, and that's fun and brilliant. And then you can also be in a basement in Newcastle and have someone come up to you after a show and be like, my daughter is going through something similar and I didn't get it, and now I've watched this show and I think I do. And it's like, you know, they're such different emotions that come off the back of performing, both valid and both valuable and both brilliant. It was a really special thing that I feel like this show did that for a few people, and that was that's what I'm most proud of, more than decent reviews and that kind of stuff. Those moments are really important. They're the ones that matter, really, beyond the stars and nonsense.
Yeah, and you know, I think it is still worth noting that, like, with those reviews, like, the sentiment in them really echo what you're saying about, like, you are handling these deep topics and potentially, like, sensitive subject, but, like, you do handle it really well and really sensitively, and it never feels like I'm doing it because I want to make you sad, or I'm doing it for a reaction, or even doing it to make you happy. Like, I'm just talking about it because it needs to be talked about.
Sure. And also, like, I remember I had the wonderful Elf Lyons direct me this year, and I remember saying to her specifically, I didn't want it's become a bit of a cliche now to have a sort of 45 minute mark sad bit, right? That's the kind of the Fringe show format. And I said, I really don't want that. What I want is for it to feel like a kind of undulating pace. I want it to have these moments where you're like, oh, that bit is a bit more serious, and it's followed immediately. I didn't want anything to hang in the air. I wanted there to be payoff, and I wanted it to be, it's a comedy show, and that's really important, but I didn't want there to be, I wanted those little moments that were more serious, and there's probably three throughout the hour. I wanted them dotted throughout, spaced evenly, so that there's time to kind of sit with it and then recover, and sit with it and then recover, because also that's more emblematic of what life is like as well, you know. It's more representative that you're going to have these little moments of difficulty in an otherwise really funny environment, and moments of laughing in an otherwise quite difficult environment. And I wanted that in the structure. That was, like, really important to me when I was writing it.
Yeah, and I think comedy is such an important kind of tool to you know, like with everything you see in the news and everything that's going on these days, it's such an important tool to digest like real information. And, you know, at times there are subjects where you might think like, oh, this can't be fun. But with comedy, you can be like, actually, maybe, you yes. know, it could. And it's worth talking about. And I want to talk about it because there's a chance that you'll go through it too. And comedy helps us relate.
Absolutely. It's a very human and accessible art form, you know. And I think that's why it's kind of gained the momentum that it has.
Yeah, absolutely. The next thing I'd like to talk about, I know that it is the case for a lot of comedians. I was wondering if you have kind of like a kind of marker where you're like, oh, I know that this gig's going to go well. I know that this is going to be something that I enjoy.
I think for different reasons. Like I've had gigs, obviously, there's certain gigs that you do where it's going so well that you get to like, really lean into like all the little trinkets between the main punchlines, even when they're getting like a big reaction and stuff. There's this lovely sense of peace where you're just like, oh god, I have to really sod this up for it to go badly now. There's like a real comfort in that. But I think for different reasons, I mean, I've also had gigs where the gig's been fine, like it's been absolutely fine, you know, the nicer side of fine, but the green room's been fantastic, and I'll get home from work and go, what a fantastic day in the office. Like, you know, it's not necessarily that the gig blew my mind, it'll be that I had a really stimulating evening with my colleagues and my friends. It might be that I've played somewhere brand new and the venue was beautiful, and you know, there's so many things that can make a gig good, and it doesn't have to be that it you know, blew the minds of 300 people, or that it I don't know, you tried a new bit and it went fantastically. It can be so many different reasons that you have a great time, you know. And yeah, I think that's the other, I was thinking about this the other day actually, because this is such a strange job, you know, the saying, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the like route to madness.
I mean, Einstein said that.
Yes, wonderful, thank you. Arguably, comedy is doing the same thing over and over and getting different results. And that is the route to madness. Like that's why we'll all go mad, and that's why comedians are addicted to gigging. And it is addiction, like that's obviously a huge oversimplification and quite a reductive use of that word, but it really can be. And it's because you can say the same set of words to one room of people, and then an hour later, if you're doubling, say the same set of words to a completely different reaction. And yes, obviously there's a variable there in that you're saying it to a different group of people in a different room, but putting the same input and getting a different output is why we'll all go insane, because there's nothing exact about it, and there's no sort of empirical kind of review that you can give to then enact change. There's just that's what will send us all insane.
Yeah, I think maybe that should be a warning, like before everyone does their first gig, like, hey, you know, it's lovely to have you here. I can't wait to see you perform. Just let you know, you're going to go absolutely crazy while you do this, but have
absolutely.
Fun doing it.
Like, are you prepared for this to dominate your life? Are you prepared for it to ruin relationships? Are you prepared for it to mean that you either don't make any social events ever again, or you turn up 3 hours late with a suitcase? You have to, you know, it just completely tips your life on its head. And it is, you know, it's why it attracts a very particular kind of person. And it is just a weird, it's a very, very weird, very, very specific kind of job and a specific kind of industry. And people like to compare it to music. And I don't think that's necessarily helpful or accurate. And I've said this before on things, but I think weirdly the most similarities I've ever found is in snooker. Like if you watch any kind of snooker documentary, of which there are quite a few, the culture around it and the mentality of the people that do it and do it well are very, very, very similar to comics.
Yeah, and I guess in a very kind of reductive addition to that, like, you know, in that kind of joke perspective, like the table is your stage. You always get there. You'll always have that stage. You'll always have that setup that is exactly the same. It's always the same. You'll always go for that break. But once you have broke, like, you don't know where everything's going to go. You can't say, oh, the white ball's going to end up here, and this is going to go there, and this is going to go there.
100%. 100%. It's exactly that. It's
That is
exactly that.
hands down the most genius analogy that we've had in however many of these episodes I've recorded now.
Well, you're very welcome.
Lovely. I think, you know, in terms of recording this podcast and speaking to so many comedians now, like, it's always so lovely to get to talk about your best gigs and what those are and what made them so great. And that's great. But I've kind of thought this podcast is the result of, you know, never having access to the app BetterHelp. And this, for me, this is a lot of comedians' therapy that we do. And this is how we get it out. So I hate to do this, but now we've got to, you know, you could regale us with the tale of your very worst gig.
I've had a think, right? Because I mean, I feel really fortunate that there's not one that like absolutely sticks out as being character defining. I've made a really short list for you for just like, and they're all like different flavors of bad. Because I thought it was important to be comprehensive. So one that was bad just because it was so weird, and you have to do these weird gigs quite often as a comic. Because people treat stand-up comedy like a CD. They think you can just put it in and it'll happen. And that's not possible. There are so many conditions that mean it's doable. And I was hosting a, oh God, it was a graduation for a beauty, I don't really know what the beauty technician school in Falkirk. And I was hosting their graduation, and then they wanted me to do 20 minutes of material at the end of it. Now, there's so many reasons why that's an insane idea, but I was a very new comic, and it paid really well. It started late because as people were filing in, there was a PowerPoint and of like all of the graduates' work, you know, on a sort of carousel or rotation. And one of the mums realised that their child's work wasn't in the PowerPoint, it had been missed, and refused to start the ceremony until their child's work had been added to the PowerPoint, re-uploaded. So it all started late anyway, for that insane reason. And then I had to, read the names of all these people. And then obviously they've just graduated and they're there with their families. They want to talk to one another or go home or go out or go out for dinner. That's what they want to do. But Muggins here is contractually obliged to talk at them for 20 minutes. So they didn't, luckily for them, didn't let me get in the way of them continuing their conversation. So they literally did just talk to each other. Why wouldn't you? Like your child's just graduated, of
Of
course.
course.
But I had to sort of, like a sort of unwelcome podcast, just witter away in the background with one eye on my watch. I remember walking away from that being like, yeah, no, I earned that money. Like, it was, oh God, that was, oh, so grim. There are certain gigs you do where you can see the money like racking up at the back of the room, like it's a smart meter, that like you can see it. And then so there was also as far as like boisterous gigs or like aggressive gigs go, I was doing a run. It was like a Christmas run, at a, I won't name them, a very a brilliant club in the UK, like fantastic. But there was a bottle fight that kicked off halfway through. And by the way, for anyone that doesn't know as well, like Christmas gigs are notoriously like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan. They're just like carnage. It's just they're awful. But there was a bottle fight that started halfway through. Someone tried to glass another member in the front row. Three women vomited into the aisles, which then meant obviously no one could leave or get in.
Oh, you were
It was
trapped.
just like, I remember getting back to the hotel and just like taking a big deep breath and being like, I feel like I've survived something.
That's
You know when you
great. You
land after
literally
like a
survived the
hairy
blasting.
flight? Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. And then, we go again tomorrow. Like, it's such a, oh, what a weird job. But yeah, so that was a lot. That was a lot. And there is also, though, a kind of serenity that comes with a gig when it's unplayable. When you know, like, nothing about this evening is my fault. Like, I am literally just pissing into the wind now, and I need to let that happen. That's fine. Like, there's a real kind of serenity to that. I had a couple during this fringe just gone. I was very lucky. The actual shows themselves were lovely, and I had a few that were quietish but fine. That's normal. But I had a what my contact lens split into three about 5 minutes before going on stage. I rubbed my eye too hard and it split, and I had to like fish out the three fragments, these like shards of my contact lens from my eye, which was already horrible. And then it was my worst eye as well. So I had one eye where I could basically just see colour, and then one eye that had a contact lens in. And I didn't realise what that did to your like depth perception. And like I did this whole show feeling like I was on a ferry. Like, I just felt seasick for like, it was so weird. It was such a, oh, so strange. That was a very, very odd. And then the day after, I had like a back to back of two shows. The day after, I was really sick in the morning. I still don't know what it was. And I was vomiting right up until walking on stage. And it was so bad that my tech hid a bucket behind the curtain on stage in case I needed to use it. And to this day, I don't understand how I made it through that hour without vomiting everywhere, because I was consistently being sick both sides of the show. And I just, for whatever reason, Dr. Showbiz kicks in and was just like, you can't vomit on 80 strangers. You just can't be doing that.
Yeah, I guess it's like that trance-like state that, like, if you don't do comedy, you probably won't know that, like, you get on stage and you're so hyper-focused that either, like, you've been up there for 2 minutes or an hour and it's going great, but you've no idea what you've said, or you've been there for like 10 hours, but you've not said a word at all.
It's honestly like it was so strange. Like, I don't know how I did it, but I do remember being like, I'm gonna throw up on stage. And like, thank the Lord, didn't. That's like, I had food poisoning once that kicked in on the train down to Nottingham. And I was going to do the Nottingham Glee for the weekend. And for 5 hours on an Avanti West Coast train, I was just turning myself inside out. I've never been so ill in my life. It was like oysters food poisoning. And so I couldn't do the Friday night show. And then, but I was being sick until 4 a.m. And I was like, I refuse to come to Nottingham to throw up in a hotel and then go back up again. Like, I need to at least do one show. So on the Saturday, still had aggressive food poisoning, like so bad. And again, it's like a self-employed thing. You know, we don't get sick pay. It's like, if I don't do this, I've paid for a return ticket to Nottingham and not earn any money. Like that, I can't do that. So
Yeah,
I remember.
and no one wants to go to Nottingham
No,
if they're not
there was
being
a moment
paid
where I was
for
like, if I die in Nottingham,
it.
I'll kill myself. I was so sad. So I was like in the fetal position backstage, and I was hosting as well. So I was like boomeranging back and forward, and would just literally turn it on for 10 minutes, then go backstage again, straight into the fetal position, and just was like sipping soda water. It was, oh God, it was just awful, absolutely awful. The things
Yeah, I
you
mean, I really
find
respect the
yourself
effort, but
doing.
I would like to know, like, you said your stage tech put a bucket either side of the stage. Like, what were they expecting? Was, like, how did they think you were going to discreetly do that? Like, just run, be sick, come back and go, well, that's the show.
There was going to be no discretion about it. The curtain was behind me, and the plan was basically don't ruin the venue. So it's just like, Amy, if you're going to be sick on stage, if you could do it neatly into an assigned bin, that would be great. That was the plan, and thank Christ wasn't needed. But yeah, that was one heck of a slog. And as far as like deaths go, it's really funny actually, because like I my like 11th gig or something was the, as with lots of people's actually, was the Chortle Student Comedy Award. And for anyone who doesn't know, Steve Bennett, who runs Chortle, puts up your video, and there's a clause in your contract that says you can never have it taken down,
Yeah.
regardless of how it
I've actually
goes.
seen this video.
Yes, I'm so sorry to hear that. So basically, you do like your 5 minutes or whatever, but the heat I did, there were 12 people in the audience, and 10 of them were relations of one of the acts. So just for context, that's two people and then somebody's family. There to watch, I think there were 12 or 13 acts on, and I was 12. And they hadn't made a noise yet. So I already knew, like I was there with my friend James, and I knew what the state of affairs was like. They hadn't laughed at anything. I don't think they even laughed at their relation. Like there was just, they were like a clinically mute audience. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, I guess I just have to do, that's what this is, that's fine.
Yeah, I
I
find the
saw.
description of this video very funny because it's just Amy Matthews at a very quiet Glasgow heat at the Chortle Student Comedy Awards 2018.
Come on, Steve. Come on, man.
Yeah, which
So,
really sounds like an insult in that in the description there.
I know. I think actually, I mean, in his brain, bless him, he might have been like, oh, well, if I explain there was basically no one there, it'll explain that she's not dying, if she is dying, but she's not dying, but she's in a room of mannequins. So I was like, for fuck's sake. And like, because I don't really put much online at all, it's like one of the few like clips of me online, which is very funny to me. For ages, it used to like, I used to like wake up at 3 in the morning and be like, fuck's sake, that's still out there. And it just, I don't care anymore. It's very funny that like one of the objectively most horrendous experiences of me on stage is documented for the world to see, which, you know, you sort of have to be at peace with.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is, like, you know, when the context of the video is there and when you know what that crowd was like I think the whole video would have been saved if there was like a pan out to see the whole of the crowd. Like, you do get from what, you know, does seem like a really quiet bunch of people, like, you do get a pretty good laugh from it.
Mate, I smashed it. Absolutely. I smashed that gig. It just sounds like I was having an absolute breakdown because it was like gigging to nothing.
And I think you handled it really well. Like if that was my gig, I think I would have been crying. But like,
thanks,
you know, you
man.
just kind of carried
Oh,
on
that's very
like it was
kind.
100 people.
It was very funny, but yeah, so that wasn't great. But yeah, it's just different. It's different kinds of bat. There are so in the way that there are so many different kinds of great gigs for so many different reasons. There are loads of different bad ones as well. There's also like you can do a gig where objectively you do great, but if you're bored of the material and you're giving yourself a hard time that you haven't written new stuff or whatever, you won't enjoy it. You know, like it's there's so many. It's a textured landscape. But yeah, it's yeah. I mean, I feel very fortunate. You know, that it's a shame that this is the bar, really. But I've never been on. You know, I've never been attacked at a gig. I've never. You know, I've never had a gig that has made me question who I am, what I'm doing. You know, like it's. You've just got, and also I do think that I'm relatively good with having perspective and healthy kind of relationships to gigging. But yeah, I do, it there's been so many bad ones for lots of different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite fortunate to be on the lineup in this podcast where one of the guests has been punched at a gig, and one of the guests told me that they had an existential breakdown on stage in front of their nan. So, you know,
Oh,
you say you set the bar low, but it
I
happens.
know. I've watched an audience member try and punch Liam Farrelly in the throat. And that was a gig. Actually, I've forgotten about that one. That was a gig where a fire alarm went off halfway through my set because someone started smoking a joint in the toilets. So yeah, actually, that one didn't even cross my mind. That was just like a day at work.
Decided next time I gig, I might just start challenging audience members to fight me. Like, you know, if it seems like it
Oh, do
isn't going
it. Get a
well,
good
just so
story.
that it's not my fault that I'm bombing, what I could do is just like try and rile them up and be like, "You are nothing. You can't fight me." And then when I get home and my wife's like, "Oh, how did it go?" I can just be like,
I'm
"Oh, well,
afraid I got
the
punched in
crowd
the
tried to
throat.
fight me, so it didn't go well, but it wasn't my fault."
That's smart.
I think
Really
that's the way
smart.
that it could always be handled. Over the course of this podcast, you've given some like really incredible advice already, and you know, obviously, I really appreciate that. But I was wondering, is there one bit of advice that you think has really helped you, or you would give to any new stand-up comedian or someone really wanting to try it out? And you can say no; it's technically a yes or no question.
Thank you. Just not to mo success isn't like a. I've got friends in comedy at every single rung, like from like just starting out to national treasure household name, and every single one of them still has somewhere else they want to be, still has like an ambition to go like to move a rung up the ladder. And every single one of them also just kind of really wants to be at home with a cup of tea. Those are the things that matter really. Whatever your next thing is and what life around it looks like. That is what is valuable. And if you think, if it's important to have goals, of course it is, but don't think that achieving X goal is going to be the thing that makes you happy or the thing that makes you feel like you've made it, you're doing it. I had someone ask me recently, like, so you're a comedian, right? What's the dream? And my reply was, I'm living it. I pay my bills doing the thing I love. I've won. Like it, everything else is it. Like, and that doesn't make my ambition unimportant anymore. I'm still very driven, and my career is very important to me. And I love my job, and I want to be great at it, and I can always be better at it. But I think if you particularly if you're looking, it's not like we all grew up in a school system where people your age were at the same level as you, and the people slightly older were a bit further ahead, and you know, the other way around. Then you leave a system that works like that. It's the same with any job, you know, where suddenly that structure isn't in place, and you can look to your left and your right, and there can be people newer, and there could be people that have been doing it a million years, and that is also going to be the case at every stage. So I think there's a very human, you know, aspect to looking at what other people are doing and going, oh, I want that. And that's fine. You're allowed to want that. There's space for you to do that at some point if you want, or if you're good enough, or if you get it, then great. But I think it is the absolute route to madness to think, oh, if I get that, then I'll be happy, because you won't. Like, you'll go insane. And another tip as well, I think, and again, you're allowed professional jealousy, you're allowed personal jealousy, you're allowed resentment, you're allowed all those really human things that come with just trying to do anything and having other people try and do the same thing. That's all really allowed. But developing a skill of being genuinely overjoyed for when someone who you think deserves something gets it is like so important, because you will rot from the inside out unless you like have the ability to engage that gear, because it is an industry that is merciless in you know, there's so much more rejection than there is you know, achievement. And that's not to invalidate any pain in those rejections or any, as I say, jealousies of other people getting stuff. But I think there's a real skill to holding space, to be really excited on someone else's behalf.
Yeah. I love that this part comes right at the end of the podcast, because it was so lovely.
Oh, that's nice.
That just came right after we were talking about someone nearly getting glassed.
It's a multi-dimensional line of work, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think you're really onto something with that. Like, you see it with the very best of comedians. Like, yeah. Everyone just wants to be mates, and everyone just wants everyone to do really well. Yeah.
So it's now time for what I think is the most important question of the podcast, a question that in the upcoming season, one of the guests told me they wouldn't dignify me with an answer. And that's one of the worst things they've ever been asked. But Amy, it is the namesake of the podcast, Die Hard. Do you think it's a Christmas movie?
No, yes. Yes, yeah. I'm not watching that in June. Yes, I do. I think yes, I do.
There you go. Yeah, I think that's such a great and insightful answer. Also, in honor of that future guest, I'll give you the opportunity now to insult me or the podcast.
I can't possibly do that. We're just talking about supporting one another. I don't know if I can do that. I was actually thinking about what a lovely little duck is on your hat. You're wearing a lovely cap with a little duck on it. And I think that's what I've been podcasting to, actually. I think I've made eye contact with a little duck.
It's a bad hair day. That's why.
Is it a bad hair day?
Not anymore. I've kind of flattened it down.
You flattened it down. Yeah, you look little Lego boy now. But no, there we go. That's as much of an insult as you're getting out of me. Little just Lego hair.
Poor little Lego
with a lovely duck on your head.
I can accept that. That's the perfect insult. Maybe that's how I start introducing the podcast. Hello, welcome back to Died Hard with me, the little Lego boy.
With a little duck on his head. Yeah, that's a good time. It's a good time.
It has been absolutely lovely to have you here on the podcast.
My pleasure.
So thank you for doing this. This now is what we call the plugging minute. It's the most liberal minute of the podcast, where you just get to plug absolutely anything you want, your tour, your socials, whatever you've got coming up.
Thank you very much. So, socials are at Amy F. Matthews, where I post an update about whatever bits and bobs I've coming up. And the bits and bobs I've got coming up are a tour for the next 3 months. I'll be around the UK. Come and see me. And that that finishes at the Soho Theatre in March. I would love to see a couple of people there. That would be so nice. And with regards to old shows, I'm in the process of editing two pre-recorded hours, so they will be out in the coming few months. And with regards to future shows, I've got work in progresses at Camden Comedy Club with the wonderful Josh Weller, and also the Glasgow Comedy Festival will be a brand new show as well. So lots of new, lots of old, lots of current, but yeah, all of it gets updated at Amy F. Matthews or amymatthewscomedy.com.
Awesome. And those links will be there for you to find in the episode description, because Beautiful. We know here at Die Hard that everyone is probably just as lazy as me.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Obviously, cannot wait for those shows to be recorded and put up online. As you alluded to earlier, not much of your comedy really makes its way onto the internet. So it'll be lovely to see if that takes the top spot from the Glasgow Heat.
Let's bloody hope so. Honest to God. Steve Bennett, you've ruined my life now.
Awesome. Well, this is where we leave it with this special bonus episode of Die Hard.
Oh, amazing.
It was so much fun to record. It's been lovely to sit down and chat with you, Amy. And those links you can find in the description. Before you leave, why not leave a 5-star review for the podcast? If you loved this episode, leave a review about that. If you loved Amy, leave a review about that. If you love another comedian, talk about them. Talk about your favorite episode, your favorite comedy, whatever it is. Just leave a 5-star review. It really helps this podcast get found by more people. And it really helps us grow as well and get even better guests. Guests like Amy and like some of these incredible guests we've got coming up in season 2. Cannot wait to see you on February 5th, season 2.